All right, my name's Ken, and I'm on staff here at Every Nation Melbourne. I'm one of the pastors here, and we are starting a new series, and it's called Word. But it's not the word words. I'm not actually talking about the Bible word or Jesus, the Word of God. The Word is actually it's an acronym that stands for things. So the letter W stands for something. Letter O, R, D. They all stand for different words. So and which happens to spell the word word. And we're going to be actually what they do. What the letters in the word word spells is our values, and we're starting a series on our values. And so we are Every Nation Melbourne. We're part of a global movement called Every Nation, which has global values. And the global values of Every Nation around the world, wherever you go, different parts, whether it's Africa or Europe or South America or North America or the Pacific or wherever you go, these are our global values. Lordship, the Lordship of Jesus, evangelism, this desire to reach out to people, discipleship, process of seeing people grow and be able to make disciples themselves, spiritual family, that we relate to one another and we connect with, or family, just family in general, that we value family and spiritual family, and this idea of leadership, that we can grow in our ability to serve other people. So those are our global values. And you know, it's powerful. It's powerful to have these global values. And the word spells out those values articulated and contextualized for who we are here in Melbourne. And so, in fact, if you do our DNA class, so actually what we've gone high tech in Every Nation Melbourne, we can do our DNA class online through Google Classroom. We've set it up. So there's a code that's going around, and maybe we can organise to post that up at some point at the end, the code for the Google Classroom, where you can actually go in, and there's four videos about 20 minutes long. There's different film, some sheets, worksheets to work through. And there's a test at the end for those of you who think you can get 100%. You know, it's $5 for the first person to get 100 out of 100. And they'll come out of, you can just take it out of your tires, that's fine. And so it's there to be done, and you can learn. And you can see how we've got a little diagram that shows how these global values directly correlate to our local contextualized values, and so which spell the word, word. And values are important, right? So what are our, do I have it here? Yes, these are our values. Worship, outreach, relationship, and discipleship. And we will go into that in greater depth over the next 4 weeks. And obviously today we're going to be looking at worship. Why is worship our first value? You know, and we'll look into that into greater depth. But why even spend a series on values? Well, values help to define who you are. Values, if you know what your values are, then they can help you make decisions. Okay, I've got a choice between A and B. A lines up greater with our values than B. So therefore, it's an easy choice. Why do we meet here in the city, in this location? Why do we spend X amount of dollars to meet here each week? Well, because it reflects a value that we have. One of the values that we have is outreach to university students. And so it's an easy choice. Do we continue to meet in Richmond in a movie theater with a bigger screen and much more comfortable chairs, or do we move to somewhere that reflects our values? Well, easy decision. That's the power of values. We will move to somewhere that reflects our values. We want to be close to the university campus because there's 50,000 students there from all around the world and Australia, and at Melbourne University, the best university in the world, where I graduated from, and there is another university, RMIT University, another 50,000 students. You know, it's not too bad, I suppose. If you went to RMIT, then we can pray for you afterwards as well. So, but we are in the midst of 100,000. This is our, you know, a lot of you guys are from the Philippines. This is our U-Belt. The Central Business District is our university district. It's where the highest concentration, that's why we moved here. Because of our values. Easy decision. For me, an easy decision. Because it's a clear articulation of our values. So values are very helpful when we know what they are, because they help define us, they help us make decisions, they help, they provide direction, and they provide boundaries. Boundaries are really good to have. These are the boundaries that I have in my life. These are the boundaries that we have as a family. These are the boundaries that we have as a church. Does it line up? We won't cross this boundary because That's for someone else to do. But we will do what God's called us to do. These are the values that have been given to us. They inform our mission and our vision. So we have a mission in Every Nation Melbourne. We have a vision. We have a 2020 vision. We are looking to plant an extension service in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne in the second half of next year. And the longer term vision is the 2030 vision, where in the four districts that we've divided Melbourne up into, we're believing to have church planting churches established in each of those four districts. So, you know, it's a big vision, right? But it's consistent with our values. It's being informed by our values. We know what our values are. And if values are to be valuable, then you have to live by them. I wonder how many people, how many organizations have, unvaluable? Is that the word? Unvaluable? Valueless values. Valueless values, because they don't actually live by them. They don't actually work. They're not informing their mission and their vision. Values are important. What are your values? What are your personal values? You know, do your personal values line up with, do you know what they are? Are you able to articulate them? And do they line up with the way you live your life? So maybe you are able to articulate some values. This is what my values are, but are they actually portrayed in your actions, the way you live your life? And even if you haven't got articulated values, we can say, hey, Ken, these are the five values, and they spell a nice little word like yours does for Every Nation Melbourne, a nice little acronym. Even if you have an articulated value system, even if you don't have one, you still have values. Even if you don't know what they are, even if they don't spell a fancy little acronym, you still have values that you live by. And you know what's interesting? People around you can probably tell by your actions, where you spend your time, where you spend your money, just the way you carry yourself, conduct yourself, what your values are. They should be able to. So hopefully what they say your values are lines up with what you think they are. But do you know them? Have you articulated them? Even if you don't, you still have them, and other people can tell what they are. But the power of articulated values is that they can be clearly communicated and they can inform our decision-making process, our mission and our vision. So we are doing this series over the next 4 weeks, this week included. We're doing this series in the next 4 weeks so we can clearly articulate who we are. This means that you can see who you are as a human being, who God's created you to be, the gifts and the experiences and the hopes that you have lines up with who we are at Every Nation Melbourne. Do you want to be a part of who we are? Can you be a part? Maybe you want to be a part, but the values are different. And it's like, I really like you, Ken. I like your wife better. I could take it or take you or leave you type thing, but I really like your wife, but just the values, you know, there's not quite an alignment there. And, you know, wish you the best of luck, but I'm going to where my values do align. So we're doing this series so you can see, can you be a part? Do you want to be a part? Can you be a part of who we are? Maybe this will provoke you, like I said, to do our DNA class. If that $5 bribe to get the first 100 out of 100 test result isn't enough, then maybe to see and to work out, okay, I want to know who Every Nation Melbourne is. I want to know if their DNA lines up with my DNA, if we can go on this journey together. Not just for a season, but maybe for a lifetime. Imagine that. I wonder, does that still happen? Do people still spend an entire life in one church? Maybe in the country. I see my sister-in-law, Jen. But even in the country, sometimes not. Depends on your values. That's right. That's why we're doing this series. So our first value is worship. And a little bit of definition here. Worship is more than just music and singing. Oh yeah, okay, yeah, we know. It involves dancing as well. What's more than dancing? Oh, what about flag waving? Yes, that's part of worship, but still playing the tambourine, painting, getting up on stage and painting as well. That's a worshipful expression. But Worship is more than all those things. Worship is more than music and singing and dancing and flag waving and painting. It's more than these creative expressions. Worship is more than that. Worship is our human response to what we think is glorious. Whatever we ascribe incredible value, even ultimate value to, our response, the way we respond to what we think is magnificent and glorious and beautiful, that is worship. So that can be in creative expressions, like singing and dancing and flag waving, playing the tambourine or whatever, or it could be the way we choose to live our life. And I'd say it's primarily the way we choose to live our life. Worship is our human response to what we think is glorious. Humans are worship factories. We are made to worship. And so you'll see in our culture the various things that are ascribed as valuable that our culture will worship. Grab 100 people off the street, 100 people from your workplace, they will worship different things. They might not sing to it, they might not dance about it, but maybe they will as well. You know, one of the biggest temples in our culture is the MCG, 100,000 people. And they will raise their hands, and they will yell, and they will scream, and they will go on an emotional roller coaster ride, up and just incredible, incredible commitment to something that's bigger than they are, something that they consider glorious, success and victory of their team. But I mean, there's other things. Grab 100 people from your workplace, 100 people off the street. Humans are worship factories, worship sex, obviously. Very essentially based culture. Power. Humans will worship power. Humans will worship beauty. Humans might even worship pain. Worship factories. Humans worshiping leisure or success. Comfort. Comfort's a big thing, right? Our whole advertising industry is geared towards making our lives more comfortable. Part of why a lot of people move to Australia is greater comfort. Some people move to Australia not because for other reasons, but some people move because it's seen as an upgrade of lifestyle. And there's nothing wrong with a lot of these things. Some of them aren't good things, but the things that we worship. But what is Christian worship? Christian worship, I would say, is our obedient response to a glorious King. Our obedient response to a magnificent King. Our obedient response to the most glorious entity in the world. It's Jesus. And there's a whole book that's about worship. It's the Bible. Actually, the whole Bible is about worship. And there's a whole book in it. And it's not the book that you're probably thinking of. You're probably thinking Psalms, right? Psalms is all about songs. And it's 150 songs there, and must be all about worship. No, actually, the whole book that's about worship is Revelation. And you know, it's a bit sad that people read Revelation to try and find out when the end of the world is coming. And then they have all the different theories, and you know, I have my theories as well, absolutely, and I think they're right. And then there's all these other theories that are in there that people have. But if we focus, we try to read Revelation to find out when Jesus is coming back, then we miss out what Revelation is really about. A glorious King who's worthy of worship. And it's more than just singing, and it's more than music and dancing and flag waving and all that kind of stuff. It's so much more. All right, let's have a look at Revelation. I'm going to read two parts of Revelation. Revelation chapter 1 at the beginning and Revelation chapter 19 towards the end. And this is portrayals of a glorious King and how people have responded. Revelation chapter 1, verse 12, I turned around to see the voice that was speaking to me. So this is John, the beloved disciple who's in exile on the Isle of Patmos, and he is having a vision. A revelation of Jesus. He's having a vision of Jesus. So the whole book tells us it's a revelation of this glorious King and appropriate responses to him. So Revelation chapter 1, John, turned around to see the voice that was speaking to me. And when I turned, I saw seven golden lampstands. And among the lampstands was someone like a son of man. It goes, a reference. Revelation goes right back. Is the last book of the Bible is so cross-referential to books of Daniel, to books of Ezekiel, books of Isaiah, books of Jeremiah. So like a son of man, this is from Daniel chapter 7, a son of man raising up who receives worship from the nations, dressed in robe, reaching down to his feet and with a golden sash around his chest. Oops. The hair on his head was white like wool, as white as snow, and his eyes were blazing fire. His feet were like bronze glowing in a furnace, and his voice was like the sound of rushing waters. In his right hand, he had seven stars, and coming out of his mouth was a sharp, double-edged sword. His face was like the sun shining in all its brilliance. Lifted out of Ezekiel, that passage. Verse 17, when I saw him, I fell at his feet as though dead. Then he placed his right hand on me and said, do not be afraid. I am the first and the last. I am the living one. I was dead, and now look, I'm alive forever and ever, and I hold the keys of death and Hades. So here is the first appearing of Jesus and the description of him using a whole bunch of Old Testament tradition to explain the appearance of God. Jesus is God, Son of Man, worthy of worship. Daniel 7, the Son of Man ascends from earth, sits at the right hand of the throne of God, and receives worship from the nations. I was dead, and now look, I'm alive forever and ever. How does John respond to this first glimpse? This is just the first go at it. How does he respond? He falls down as dead. What do you do instinctively in the face of power and glory? What do you do? What have you seen that's been glorious? That has an element of danger to it. Heard people talk about, walking up to the edge of the Grand Canyon and just almost being seized with an existential fear of, like, what's... just like a dread inside of them because of the beauty and the hugeness of it. And that's just a hole in the ground. I mean, a beautiful hole in the ground. Here is the King of Kings, Lord of Lords. He falls down as dead. What do you do instinctively in the face of power and glory? You, I have to make sure I pronounce this correctly, prostrate yourself. Not the other one. Prostrate yourself and you acknowledge that he is more powerful, he is greater, that he is able to, in a moment, if he wanted to, wipe you out of existence. Daniel falls down like dead. Just an instinctive, natural reaction to a glorious king. You know, what if the Queen of England walked in here? How would you feel? Maybe there might be one or two of you that walk up and say, hey, Lizzie, how you doing? But most of us, there's something in us that recognizes status, right? Even in our egalitarian culture of Australia, we still recognize that there is status. And this is real status. I mean, there's a lot of contrived status in different cultures, right? But this is actually real. This is fundamental status. Jesus was dead and now he is alive. He has won the victory over death. And all John can do is fall down like he is dead. All right, next one. This is moving towards the end of Revelation. Then the angel said to me, this is once again John, write this, blessed are those who are invited to the wedding supper of the Lamb. And he added, these are the true words of God. At this, I fell at his feet to worship him. So he's falling at his feet to worship an angel. So even this angel has this sense of glory about him. But the angel puts him right and says this. But he said to me, don't do that. I'm a fellow servant with you and with your brothers and sisters who hold to the testimony of Jesus. Worship God, for it is the spirit of prophecy who bears testimony to Jesus. I saw heaven standing open, and there before me was a white horse whose rider is called Faithful and True. With justice he judges and wages war. His eyes are like blazing fire, and on his head are many crowns. He has a name written on him that no one knows but he himself. He is dressed in a robe dipped in blood. It's taken from Isaiah 63, and his name is the Word of God. The armies of heaven were following him, riding on a white horse and dressed in fine linen, white and clean. Coming out of his mouth is a sharp sword with which to strike down the nations. He ruled them with an iron scepter. That's Psalm 2, Messianic Psalm. He treads the winepress of the fury of the wrath of God Almighty. And on his robe and on his thigh he has this name written, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. What is the correct response to this glorious king? So, is it that we meet together for half an hour during our church service on a Sunday and we sing songs together? Is that the correct response? in its fullness, in its entirety? No, it's not. It's part of it. Jesus is more glorious than requiring 30 minutes of our singing, of my attempt at playing bass on a Sunday. He's more glorious than that. He's the King of Kings. He's the Lord of Lords. He rules the nations with an iron scepter. If you read Psalm 2, why do the nations rage in vain? Nothing compared to Jesus. So is 30 minutes of singing songs together on a Sunday the entirety of the correct response to this glorious King? Of course it's not. What about listening to contemporary Christian worship on our playlist during the week? So as well as 30 minutes on a Sunday, that when we're driving to work or commuting on the train, we're also listening to Hillsong or Elevation music, or, you know, if we're really holy, hymns. Is that, if we add that to our 30 minutes on Sunday, is that the correct response to this glorious King, the King of Kings and Lord of Lords? Or is worship, is the argument I'm making true? Is it correct? The argument I'm making is that worship is more than singing and music. What's interesting about those two passages I read, Revelation 1, Revelation 19, is that they are bookends of the book of Revelation. And it's a book about worship. And as you go through the book of Revelation, don't read Revelation to see or try to work out what's happening. These locusts coming out of the pit, their Apache attack helicopters and trying to work. Just read it for what it has meant to Christians for the past 2,000 years. That there is a glorious King and his people respond a specific way to this glorious King. It's a book about worship. As you read it, I mean, there's lots of songs in there. Lots of songs. Lots of times, lots of instruments being played. But it is so much more than, Revelation is so much more than songs and music. It's much more about faithfulness. Much more about sacrifice. It's actually about martyrdom. About witness. Greek word witness, martyreo, to witness, literally means to die as a martyr. It's much more. Revelation is much more. It's about worship, but this is worship. Faithfulness, sacrifice, martyrdom, trust in the glorious King who has already defeated the enemy, but it looks like I'm suffering and going through pain right now. What do I do? Do I worship? Yes. Yes. Does that include singing songs? Yes. But more than that, it's fundamentally trusting and responding to his glory with this sense of, you know what, I choose you. I've chosen you and I'll continue to choose you. So Revelation is much more about faithfulness and sacrifice and martyrdom and trust and rejection of false kings and allegiance to the true King, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. Music and singing. We often equate music and singing with worship, and there's a reason why we did it. It's because music and singing are the heart's language to express allegiance, right? What you value, it's the language we speak in. What you love, you will sing about. What you value, you will sing about. You will write songs about. I mean, that's, you know, every teenage boy has wanted to get a girlfriend, has written a song, right, to try and win someone over. That's why Derry's going, no, no, no. But Derry, that's why you're still single, bro. All right? Music and singing are the heart's language to express allegiance. Love and express allegiance. Allegiance, our love and obedience to who or what we give ourselves to. So what does this mean? Worship is our value, and the best worship is passionate. Do I follow and obey Jesus as the glorious King when life is going well? Yes. What about when life is going bad? You've heard about the movie, The Passion of Christ. I know you probably heard this before. The word passion, English word passion, comes from the Latin word passio, to suffer. We call it the Passion of Christ because it's the suffering of Jesus. So when I say the best worship is passion, I'm not talking about getting up here and jumping up and down and forming a mosh pit at the front. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. I'm not going to make light of that. I don't want to make fun of that. But really, when I say the best worship is practice, is passionate, is that we live a life where we are willing to suffer for Jesus. That's the best worship. That's our value. right? Not live in our comfort zone only, but be willing, and not to parody this idea and go around kind of as the monks of the old days and flagellate ourselves, just kind of whip ourselves and be all austere for the sake of being austere to make us look good. But really, you know what, Jesus, I'm comfortable right now. Thank you. I mean, for goodness sake, I live in Australia, right? Of course I'm comfortable, but on a global scale. But if you are calling me to step out of this comfort zone to follow you, then my act of worship is I will say yes, and I will walk into from the zone of comfort to a zone of discomfort, even a zone of suffering, because the best worship is passionate. The best worship is... Oh, I didn't underline it. Oh, well. The best worship is persistent. Will I continue to follow and obey Jesus 10 years from now? Will I persist through the inevitable ups and downs through life? I've shared with a few guys, you know, because I like to be accountable to different people. I had a tough, you know, about a week ago, I had a tough 4 weeks, just really, really tough. Just down, feeling depressed. You know, maybe the winter season coming in, having a, you know, feeling cold and all that kind of stuff, and I can look back and I can think about all the negativity that was in my mind in that season, and I can think, am I qualified to be a pastor? Am I? But you know what? I persisted. I endured that 4 weeks of internal turmoil, and I came out the other side. And that's an act of worship. And maybe if you had looked at me, you think, gee, Ken, you just need to put on some Hillsong and then get yourself right. But, and maybe that would, might have been helpful for sure. I don't want to, I say stuff like that. I'm not having a go at Hillsong. Actually, I love Hillsong and, love their worship. Go, you good thing, Joel. And, but I persisted. I came out the other side. And that was an act of worship. The best worship is passionate. Willing to suffer. The best worship is persistent. It continues. It goes through. It endures. The best worship is productive. Music and songs and other creative expressions of worship can cause us to go. So when we have our time of 30 minutes or so of singing songs together on a Sunday, that there's utility in that, right? People's lives have changed while they've done corporate worship together. People's lives have been impacted when they've listened to a Christian song throughout the week. That's great. I love that. I don't want to take away from that. But the best worship, in the way I'm defining worship, as our obedient response to a glorious King. If singing songs together for 30 minutes can make a difference in my life, then what about choosing to live my life for Jesus as an entirety, as an act of worship? How productive will that be? That will cause me to grow. The best worship is productive. The way I live my life. You know, I've grown by persisting through that 4 weeks of just feeling really blurred. I've grown. I've learned things. That's probably why God allowed it to happen. It's probably my own stubbornness and different issues in my own life as well. But I've grown through that. Oh, Matt, I'll get you to join me up here. Best worship is productive. Music and songs and other creative expressions of worship can cause us to grow, absolutely. But let's set our targets higher. Imagine a life where we redefine worship as merely songs and music to joyful obedience to following Jesus as the glorious King. Imagine what this room of people could do if we lived that way. Imagine the productivity. Imagine the growth. What would we produce? What fruit would we produce? And I'm not having a go at you guys. I say, come on. You guys aren't following Jesus. You're not worshiping Jesus enough. I mean, you know, I just want to set a vision before you that there is actually something incredible before us, an opportunity to see lives impacted and changed, a city impacted and changed. So, we value the worship of Jesus because we value Jesus. We are passionate in Every Nation Melbourne. We are passionate, we are persistent, and we are productive when it comes to Jesus. When it comes to Jesus, when it comes to his vision, the vision that Jesus has for you as an individual, for us as a church, for us, for the city of Melbourne, we're passionate, we're persistent, we're productive when it comes to the vision that he has for this city. We're passionate, persistent, productive when it comes to his values. We're passionate, persistent, productive when it comes to his people, his purpose, his name. We're passionate about the glory of Jesus. We're persistent in the glory of Jesus. We're productive in the glory of Jesus. We value the worship of Jesus because we value relationship with Jesus. The best worship is passionate, persistent, productive, and personal. This value is all about our relationship with Jesus. We don't have a relationship with an idea or with a philosophy or a morality. You know, it is high time that we disabuse Christianity from the concept of being about morality. It's actually about Jesus. Let the other stuff take care of itself. Let's go, let's be in relationship with Jesus, and morality will take care of itself. Holiness is primarily relational before it's moral. And it just is. We're not passionate about an idea, a philosophy, morality, a concept, a teaching, or anything else but a person. This person who loved us. Gave his life for us. Jesus invites us into the privilege and pleasure of worshiping him. The privilege and pleasure of knowing him. The privilege and pleasure of loving him and being loved by him. If you do our DNA class, this is what is underneath the value of worship. It says this: Jesus is the Christ, the Messiah, the King. He rules now over his kingdom, and our glad response for his life, death, resurrection, and rule is worship, which is obedience, giving, singing, witness, and declaration, to name just a few facets of the worshipful life. Our life of worship of Jesus as King is our daily intentional relationship with him. Our value, our first value, our primary value, because it's about Jesus, the glorious King. I want to invite Dan to come on up.